Welcome to episode 2, Occam's Razor, a podcast about the paranormal and the unexplained. I'm Jim Birchall. I'm here every time we do this show, which has just been twice so far, hasn't it, Niall?
Yeah, just twice.
Introduce yourself, Niall, and let the listeners know who you are and what you're all about.
Well, I'm Niall. I'm a radio journalism student, just like Jim, in the last few days before you finished trying to get all that stuff done. But like Jim, I'm also a champion of the truth, just curious about what's going on out there and what's true and what's not.
Absolutely, and that's what we hope to examine on Occam's Razor, as we did in the first episode. If you haven't listened to that, have a listen. We had a few, not teething problems, but it was a bit raw,
yeah,
a bit off the cuff. We're a lot better prepared this week.
A lot better.
This week we're going to be talking about the Slender Man. What do you know about Slender Man, Noel?
Oh, I just know about all the video games that have been going on about him.
Yep.
How it's used a lot in, youth culture, sure, stuff like that, memes.
It's a millennial thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
The Slender Man was created as part of a competition online. I'm not sure what the competition was for, maybe some sort of design thing. A guy called Eric Knudsen back in 2009. And since then, it's inspired, as you said, a lot of, media traffic, memes and all that sort of stuff. He's described as a paranormal entity, sort of a faceless, tall, slim guy with elongated limbs and all sorts of tentacles and carry on hanging out the back. So he's kind of paranormal slash a bit alien, like, extraterrestrial, whatever you want.
The modern day boogeyman, really.
He's the modern day boogeyman. He's the modern day mothman is probably a good way to describe him. So we're really including him in this podcast because I've been listening to some media recently from other sources. There was a 12-year-old girl that was, the US, was stabbed by her friends who said they were influenced by this entity, by the Slender Man. And they basically got it in their head that he was a real creation and he was dictating to them and telling them what to do and all this sort of stuff. And luckily this 12-year-old girl survived, but her two friends have received fairly hefty sentence. One of them got 40 years in a mental institution, but it is the US, so they have some absurd sort of sentences.
Really harsh, really harsh.
The world has followed the story and court cases of Morgan Geyser and Anissa Wire, two girls who stabbed their friend 19 times. The girls told police they did it to impress the fictional horror character Slender Man. They were 12 years old at the time.
There was only one little girl that was stabbed 19 times brutally.
In a victim impact letter to the district attorney and the judge, Peyton's mother, Stacy, writes that Peyton slept with a scissors under her pillow after the attack. The Leitner family does not object to the plea deals that will send Geyser and Wire to mental facilities. As for Peyton, Stacy Leitner writes, her daughter has 25 scars from the attack. Shopping for homecoming dresses leaves only a few options because far too many dresses will show off her scars. In the letter to the judge, Stacy Leitner writes that her daughter may in the future fear to love unconditionally and trust others because the last time she did, she almost died. Reporting in Waukesha, Myra Sanchik, Fox 6 News.
But there, as I said, I hadn't actually heard much about it, probably because of my age. I hadn't really looked into it too much about the myth of the Slender Man. But it seems throughout history, there's been a lot of instances of such an entity being cited. And we really want to examine whether there's any truth and validity to this, or if it's just a case of sort of mass hysteria brought on by, the power of suggestion and that sort of thing. Personally, obviously you're drawing a long bow to suggest that there's a sort of a paranormal entity that's stalking people in their bedrooms at night, yet a lot of people have claimed to see this slender man in their room. I mean, I'd be shit scared if he was in my room.
Absolutely. Would you? Go to catch the bus and he's standing at the bus stop behind you where you just were.
That's right.
Stuff like that. Cold, dark night, raining.
Well, if he'd give me a lift, you know, I got no problem with him. But, yeah, so anyway, there's been a fellow, and there's been a guy who's recently written a book. What's his name? Nick Redfern?
Yeah, Nick Redfern.
Nick Redfern. He's a UK journalist. He's written a ton of books, I think 30-odd books, basically on the stuff we talk about, you know, paranormal, cryptozoology, you know, ghost ghouls, UFOs, whatever you want. He's done it. Probably a few Bermuda Triangles and Loch Ness Monsters thrown in as well.
Bigfoot.
So what's the name of his book?
His book is called Slenderman Mysteries.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. And it has a non-fiction, you know, well, that's the main difference between that and the other media that's been put out regarding this. And he pertains that stories of the Slender Man or an entity very similar has been described over the centuries and millennia.
Oh, yeah, which is quite interesting because apparently the earliest evidence of like a Slenderman type figure was around 10,000 years ago in some cave paintings in Brazil in their Serra de Capraza National Park. I don't know if I pronounced that right. And the figure showed like a tall, slender man with kind of dark colored skin or something, and he was holding a hand of a child, kind of leading them somewhere.
Okay.
And then the second reference was in this tomb of this Egyptian pharaoh. He was. No one knows if he's kind of real or not because he might
be. Who, the pharaoh?
Yeah, the pharaoh. His name was Pharaoh Vesna or something like that. I mean, that doesn't really strike like Egyptian to you, does it?
No.
But apparently he died in around 3180 BC. And then in his tomb, there were all these hieroglyphics of this kind of tall figure, slender, kind of tendrils for arms and legs.
Sure.
And nothing on the face.
Which obviously lends towards. My thinking then gravitates towards, you know, extraterrestrials, doesn't it?
Yeah, it could be.
And, you know, ancient alien theory and astronaut theory and that sort of stuff.
Because the figure is quite reminiscent of, you know, the 50s portrayal of the Martian, you know. Kind of tall or maybe short, slender build with a big round head with no or few features on it.
Sure. But I suppose when you're living in a time when ignorance is fairly total.
Yeah. Like now.
You know, a bit like now, exactly. Not much has changed in 3,000 years.
Yeah.
You know, when people obviously thought lightning and thunder was, you know, they were up shit creek with the gods. Yeah. You know, so can you put it down to that? You know, just the mind wandering. They didn't have, you know, Netflix. What else are they going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
Paint some crazy creatures, you know, on a
tell some stories around the campfire.
Exactly. You know, is it that or is there some truth to this entity? I know Native Americans for many years have talked about a entity they call a skinwalker, and there's actually been some videos on YouTube, or one video in particular of a couple of skinwalkers. Now, obviously we're living in the digital age, in the age where everything can be fake pretty much. But this video seems to have held up to examination from people, you know, people that are proficient in you know, determining, you know, fake videos and that sort of stuff, you know, video experts and all that sort of thing. So, and Native Americans, obviously, they've got a long history, and they're quite a mysterious race, aren't they, actually?
Oh, they are. That's usually what happens when you kill them off before you talk to them.
Exactly. But, you know, they're quite, as I said, you know, they've had stories for years, so much so that Robert Bigelow, who runs Bigelow Aerospace, he's a US billionaire and made his money in motels and hotels, I think it was. He bought a patch of land and named it the Skinwalker Ranch, where he conducts all sorts of, basically it was a farm. They said all sorts of strange things were going on, like beasts were manifesting and UFOs and portals to other dimensions and all this sort of stuff. But he's taken it so seriously that he actually purchased the land and has all these, you know, or he has in the past had all these scientists basically trying to get to the bottom of it. He's a bit like us, but sort of with $1 billion more. He just wants the truth, I think. He just wants it out there. But obviously the name of that was inspired by these creatures from Native American folklore.
Navajo, I think it was.
Was it Navajo? Yeah. Yep. So, you know, as we said, I mean, the power of suggestion is pretty strong. If one person say they saw something, everyone seems to have seen it, don't they?
Well, yeah, because that's kind of similar to another reference to the Slender Man in history. It was actually a woodcut done by this German woodcutter called Hans Frankenberg, And one of these pictures called The Night in German, it featured a sort of a skeletal kind of figure with loads of different limbs with knives and swords killing people and all that. Now, some people say that it's actually a reference to all the destruction caused by the recent wars, the War of the League of Cambrai and the War of the Holy League that happened a few years before. But other people are saying that that's probably his way of representing the German ideal of the Slenderman, which is called Der Grossmann, which is this kind of tall, slender figure that lives in the Black Forest and leads children into it, where he kidnaps them and does whatever he does with them.
So I'm starting to think about the Pied Piper of Hamelin when I hear that.
Okay.
Think about it. The Pied Piper, you know, he played his flute. That's a German story, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so he, you know, he played his flute and all the kids followed him blindly because they were under some sort of spell or whatever it is, and they ended up, you know, he took them away forever into the mountain or wherever it is.
Yeah.
So maybe that, hey, maybe it's based on fact, we don't know.
Yeah. Or just different paths up the same mountain, really.
Yeah. You know, as we said, so we're talking about the power of suggestion and how people are easily led. I think you found a video about when there was a leprechaun allegedly floating around somewhere in the US. I'm not sure exactly where it was.
Possibly Detroit.
Yeah, Detroit or something like that. And we'll play the clip anyway and so you can get an idea of that.
Well, just in time for St. Patrick's Day, crowds are coming by the dozens to get an up-close view at what some say is a piece of Irish folklore.
Some people in the Creighton area of Mobile say a leprechaun has taken up residence in their neighborhood. A leprechaun. NBC 15's Brian Johnson has more.
Curiosity leads to large crowds in Mobile's Creighton community, many of you bringing binoculars, camcorders, even camera phones to take pictures.
To me, it looked like a leprechaun to me. All you gotta do is look up in the tree. Who else seen the leprechaun say, yeah?
Yeah!
Eyewitnesses say the leprechaun only comes out at night. If you shine a light in its direction, it suddenly disappears. This amateur sketch resembles what many of you say the leprechaun looks like. Others find it hard to believe and have come up with their own theories and explanations for the image.
My theory is it's casting a shadow from the other limb.
Could be a crackhead that got hold to the wrong stuff and it told him to get up in a tree and play a leprechaun.
We don't get down to the bottom of this. Yeah, still on there, guy. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid, man.
This guy, helping to direct traffic, says he's prepared for his encounter with the leprechaun. He's suited up from head to toe.
This wars off spells right here. This is a special leprechaun flute, which has been passed down from thousands of years ago from my great-great-grandfather, who was Irish. I just came to help out.
Others just came to get lucky in hopes a pot of gold may be buried under this tree.
I'm going to run a backhoe and uproot that tree. I want to know where the gold is. I want the gold. Give me the gold. I want the gold.
This is Brian Johnson, NBC 15 News.
It's very entertaining, isn't it?
It was a little bit.
Mobile, that'd be Arkansas.
Yeah, one of those red states.
It's down south, anyway, yeah. Put it that way. So, example, you know, that's a good example of, you know, one person seeing thing, everyone jumping on the bandwagon and saying, oh, yeah, I've seen that as well, and so forth. So is this what the Slender Man is, or is it, you know, is there some truth to it with this... obviously through history with these sightings and goings on.
Who knows?
Now getting back to this girl who was stabbed by her friends, they were saying that they were influenced by the Slender Man. I mean, personally, I think there's a couple of silly little girls that ended up in a fantasy world. A little bit, something similar happened in New Zealand actually years ago with... Now, those two girls, they made that movie Heavenly Creatures about it. Peter Jackson made a film. And they got so entrenched in their fantasy world of fairies and, you know, Lion, Witch and the Wardrobe sort of carry on that they end up stabbing their mother. Well, I think she was stabbed anyway, or murdering her anyway. And I think they hit her with a big rock, it could have been it. But either way, I mean, it's just this leading to adolescent sort of, you know, mental problems as a result.
Clear mental distress going on there.
Absolutely. We don't know. That's what we. That's why we're trying to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
Now, there's Nick Ridfern. He's got this book out, and he's been talking about, as you said, with the examples, with the German examples out of his book, or was that just something you'd found?
I'm not too sure if they were in his book, but it was something I found online.
Okay. We touched on the Mothman earlier in terms of mythical beasts that have terrorized towns. or mythical figures in general. The whole Slender Man, Mothman sort of carry-on reminds me a little bit of Spring-Heeled Jack. Now, Spring-Heeled Jack was, I think, about 1830s. He was described as a demonic entity again, with big sort of bat wings. He looked a bit like sort of a camp Batman,
right,
to describe him.
Victorian Batman.
Victorian Batman. Yeah, he had, you know, glowing eyes and all this sort of carry-on. And he could jump over, you know, 10-foot walls and this sort of thing. I first learned about him when I was in the UK. I was staying in an area called Barnes, and strangely enough, Spring-Heeled Jack was the area he seemed to frequent at the time. And he basically terrorized, you know, when I say terrorized, it was probably a bit of mass hysteria.
Yeah, most likely.
You know, regurgitated up by the media of the day from the police news or whatever they called it in London at the time, you know. You know, it was pretty boring. There was no TV, there was no radio. They had to make up a few stories. And Spring-Heeled Jack, you know, was terrorizing everyone around the Barnes Common and looking in windows and jumping over fences and getting chased by the police and disappearing. And a similar thing happened, I think it was in Norfolk, thing called the Devil's Footprints. They found a bunch of, obviously, footprints that looked like goat prints to an extent, but they were straight down the middle of a town, a main street in a town, and then seemed to clamber over rooftops and people's properties and all this sort of stuff. So that's one hell of a goat that's doing that. My theory on this is if we can call this one busted as well, I think Spring-Heeled Jack was probably a bored aristocrat.
Most likely.
Yeah. At the time, that part of London, sort of southwest London, not so much the gentry, but the people with a bit more tin from the start of the industrial age moved out there basically to escape the smell of London, because London stunk in those days, let's be fair. And they moved out there. And, you know, geographically, it's only probably about 10 miles from London. But if you haven't got a car and so forth, it's a...
quite a while.
You know, it's a half-day trek, isn't it? I suspect this guy was, as I said, some sort of aristocrat. He was sitting at home saying, you know, what can I do to entertain myself?
You know, go and harass the town in a bat suit.
Exactly. And this is obviously around the time of spirituality movement really took off in Britain as well. And there was a lot of seances being performed, and, you know, and a few sort of 30, 40 years later, photography came along, and then there was the spirit photography and ectoplasm photography and auras and all this sort of carry on. So I think it was the birth of... well, fakery, to put...
most likely, yeah.
For lack of a better term.
Because that's usually what happens, eh? You take a photo with your camera, the photo gets overexposed, then you assume, oh, no, that's a spirit in the photo there.
It's usually just dust particles.
Yeah, usually.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few photos from history that are very hard to... haven't been completely discredited to this day.
Yeah.
Some of them are just too good.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially for the era that they were done in. But in terms of, we will be touching on cryptozoology and obviously ufology in future episodes, but in terms of the Slender Man and Spring-Heeled Jack and the Mothman, etc., I think you've got to take these with a grain of salt, don't you know?
Yeah, well, like you said, power suggestion is a very strong thing, you know. It's human nature for people to try and fill in the cracks if they're given partial information, you know. You might see something happening out on the field, like a bright spark, and assume, oh, that's a ghost going through the field, when really someone was just lighting up a cigarette or something.
Or it's some car headlights or something like that. Interesting you say that. I saw a ghost video from Gettysburg, you know, the... Gettysburg, where the big battle was in the Civil War and so forth, and they reckon it's the most haunted place in the US. And there's some guys filming some lights basically drifting through the trees, and whilst it does look creepy, someone else pointed out, who knew the area a lot better than I did, pointed out that there's a main road probably about 2 kilometers away, and it easy could be some sort of car reflection, you know, headlight reflection, that sort of stuff, which kind of sucks if you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah, it does.
You don't need some naysayer ruining it for everyone, does it? But I think this one's pretty busted as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll just leave the Slender Man to his to terrifying little kids and stuff at night. I might tell my nephew about him if he doesn't go to bed. I'll show him a picture of him, some big faceless entity sort of carrying on.
Well, yeah, it worked on me and my cousins, got told the boogeyman's coming and getting to bed.
Getting to bed,
yeah,
exactly.
Safest place.
We're going to leave you with another video of a time where claims of the paranormal caused mass hysteria. This is dating back to the 40s and audio from the classic Orson Welles War of the Worlds incident. And we'll see you next time on Occam's Razor.
Goodbye.
We are bringing you an eyewitness account of what's happening on the Wilmoth Farm, Grover's Mill, New Jersey. We now return you to Carl Phillips at Grover's Mill.
Ladies and gentlemen, am I on? Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, here I am, back of a stone wall that adjoins Mr. Wilmoth's garden. From here, I get a sweep of the whole scene. I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk and as long as I can see. More state police have arrived. They're drawing up a cordon in front of the pit. About 30 of them. No need to push the crowd back now. They're willing to keep their distance. The captain's conferring with someone. Can't quite see who. Oh, yes, I believe it's Professor Pearson. Yes, it is. Now they've parted, and the professor moves around one side, studying the object while the captain and two policemen advance with something in their hands. I can see it now. It's a white handkerchief tied to a pole. Flag of truce. If those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute. Something's happening. A humped shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against a mirror. What's that? There's a jet of flame springing from the mirror, and it leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Lord, they're turning into flames. Now the whole field's caught up by the woods, the barns, the gas tanks of the automobiles spreading everywhere. Coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill. Evidently, there's some difficulty with our field transmission. However, we will return to that point at the earliest opportunity. In the meantime, we have a late bulletin from San Diego, California. Professor Indelkoffer, speaking at a dinner of the California Astronomical Society, expressed the opinion that the explosions on Mars are undoubtedly nothing more than severe volcanic disturbances on the surface of the planet. We continue now with our piano interlude.